Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us today for a conversation with John Maroney. John is the CEO of Alessa Therapeutics, has been a CEO of several startup companies in the Bay Area, and has served as a board member and also as a VC in the Bay Area for over 10 years. Looking forward to our conversation with John today.
Well, thanks, John, again, for taking your time to talk with us today, and appreciate the opportunity to connect. And as we've talked in the past, when we first met when you were on Sand Hill Road, and as a VC. And first off, can you just give us a little bit of your background and kind of your, sure, as you started your career, and give us some highlights?
Sure. So trained as a mechanical engineer at UC Davis, and took my first job with the Dow Chemical Company at a time when jobs for engineers were kind of tight. And they sent me to Fresno, California to be a project engineer in their films plant. So they were making film for packaging and agriculture. And I ran a multi-million dollar project, which was a terrific experience. The gal who later became my wife and still is my wife, was graduating from Davis and said she sure hoped that that I could find work in the Bay Area because she didn't want to move to Fresno.
Sure.
So I went to Dow and said, "What have you got?" And they said, "We have a hiring freeze. We have nothing in the Bay Area or in Western Division, but we have a joint venture with Cordis Corporation working on hollow fiber dialyzers for kidney dialysis." So I interviewed and joined as a process development engineer. So I was one of two mechanical engineers in a sea of chemical engineers and pulp and paper engineers doing process development for dialyzers. And from that initial experience, moved into operations management and then engineering management, and was finally, you know, managing the engineering group, and left to go to my first startup, which was a company called Oxymetrics. And they were looking for a process engineering director, and they were just realizing that they needed to split up the high volume disposables products from the instrument products, that you don't build them the same way. And so I joined and kind of reshaped the way high volume disposables manufacturing was working for them, more of a flow-based product manufacturing technique. Moved to Puerto Rico to start a subsidiary company for them, which was my first exposure to general management. So set up a factory in Ponce, Puerto Rico. Our son was born there, and we lived there for, you know, 3 years, and then came back after Abbott Laboratories had acquired Oxymetrics. And that was also my first experience with a liquidity event from a venture-backed startup company. So we did okay on that. It was a good experience. Worked for Abbott Laboratories for a while and ran some R&D programs for them, some customer service stuff, facilities, and a boatload of other things, basically doing whatever needed to be done until I found the next startup, which was cardiovascular imaging systems. So joined Cevas as employee number 10, VP of operations. We commercialized the first image. These were ultrasound, intravascular ultrasound catheters. And we commercialized first in peripheral vasculature and then moved to cardiac imaging, intra-coronary imaging. And then that company was acquired by Boston Scientific in the middle of a bunch of patent litigation. We were suing Boston Scientific and SciMed Life Systems at the same time. Sure. And I became responsible for intellectual property litigation and actually had to hire a guy to do my job so I could manage all the litigation. But I worked out a great partnership with the VP of R&D, and he was responsible for developing new IP, and I was responsible for litigating it. And it all worked out because Boston Scientific ended up acquiring us.
Okay.
And BSC said, "Hey, we need a guy to run this and some other stuff that we've acquired in the Bay Area. Would you do that?" And so I put together a technology center for Boston Scientific in San Jose and then ran that for a couple of years and then was tapped for a company called Endotex Interventional Systems, which was carotid artery stents. Fred Khosravi was the founder and the CEO, and they wanted to bring in a senior guy to help Fred manage the company. So I joined and very quickly kind of boiled it down to the key program, focus, focus, focus. Fred left and started another company, and we put that into a deal with Boston Scientific where they would acquire the company after PMA approval. And they loaned us the money to go get the PMA approved. So we did a great job, nailed it, and then sold it to BSC. In the meantime, one of our investors was Delphi Ventures, and they said, we really like the way this unfolded. Would you like to come join us at Delphi, help raise Fund 6? And that's when you and I met, was shortly after that. So right. I transitioned into venture capital as a partner, a managing member of Delphi, and then stayed for 10 years and was a partner in three funds and invested in a variety of opportunities, everything from interventional neurology to GI to women's health to orthopedics and everything in between. And it was really quite remarkable. It was fun. We made the last investment in a company called Vision 5, which was an ophthalmology company that was part of the Foresight Labs incubator. And the only risk there was that they didn't have a CEO. And so I told my partners, look, I'll go in and run it. You follow with the investment. And they did. And so I jumped in to run Vision 5. We took it through two very well-executed clinical studies, after which I left to go do my own thing, and then the company was acquired by Allergan shortly after that. So that all became part of Allergan.
Okay.
I started my own consulting business and have been advising and coaching CEOs of young startup companies, and most recently helped a physician at UC San Francisco start a company called Alessa Therapeutics, which is focused on local drug delivery for solid organ tumors. And so think prostate cancer and breast cancer. So these are implantable passive drug delivery devices that'll deliver sustained medication for 2 years. And okay. So we just got it funded on Monday.
Wow.
So we're off to the races, which is why I'm in my heavy work clothes here.
You know, I think definitely you have a pattern in your career, and in moving into the VC world was you already had some dealings with them. But what advice would you give a young executive, or maybe somebody who is for the first time looking at potentially working with a VC firm? What advice would you give them, having been on the inside?
I guess a couple things come to mind. One is, you got to be really realistic and transparent about your plans, because the VCs can sniff out a head fake really fast. And so I think you want to be true to the plan and represent the risks. I think that what investors are looking for is, okay, we understand the opportunity. What are the risks here? And talk about how you're mitigating those risks and how you'll deploy the capital to eventually scrub those risks off the plan and have a very attractive outcome at the end. So that's number one. And number two is pick your partners carefully, because it's going to be like a marriage for a long time. You're married to those investors. And I know that there are times when somebody steps up with, you know, a willingness to make an investment, but they're not very easy to work with.
Right.
I think you want to be really thoughtful about how you proceed. You can do it, but it's not going to be fun, right? You got to be really thoughtful. And I think that if you find an investing partner where you really resonate, don't be too scrappy about the deal. Don't try and squeeze the last nickel off the table, but rather get that deal closed with somebody that you trust and whose behavior you can trust in good times and in bad.
Right.
So those are a couple thoughts.
No, that's good. If you were able to go back to your 20-year-old self, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself?
I guess it's don't be hesitant to get going. I think that it's really, and sometimes I remember back early in my career, I sort of paused before taking action on stuff that I knew was actionable. And I think that in hindsight, things would have been much better off taking early action and knowing full well that you might not have the perfect answer, but if you're experimental and alert to the signals, you'll always be able to change course. Mm. And so I think get going, number one. Don't be afraid to start.
What advice did you receive that you would ignore?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Ignore. I think I recall back working on a financing, and the advice was, you know, you can hold out for a higher price. But at the end of the day, holding out for that higher price created a lot of tension around the deal. And sure, it didn't get it done any faster. We ended up at the same place, and it wasn't worth the fight, right?
So as you were thinking about your career, and you've held a number of CEO positions, how has your leadership changed over the years?
So as the first-time CEO or even first-time general manager, I think I was a little bit of a micromanager. I was really focused on the details because I used to do the details. And so there were, you know, staff meetings where there was a lot of really careful oversight. And I think what I've learned from that is people perform better when you give them some running room. You hire very, very carefully, hire the smartest people you can find and let them do their thing with guidance, but not micromanaging. And so I think that's you have to let go. And there's a huge leap of trust that you have to go through in order to let go and let people perform. But the results are always better.
Sure.
Right? If I'm micromanaging, why am I hiring these guys?
Well, maybe that's part of an engineer background where you have to make sure you've got details and you want to make sure that you're attending to the what's important. Tell me a little bit, you mentioned about, you know, as you're hiring team members, what advice would you give somebody? Maybe they're hiring their first executive team. What would you advise somebody to be thinking about?
I think you'd better be prepared to go beyond your own network. We all have our network of friends and colleagues, and to find the very best capable talent, you might have to go beyond your own network. And then it's good to find a trusted colleague like you, Mark, to go work that different network for the right candidates.
I didn't pay you to say that, so
I know. But I've used other recruiters as well, and it's sometimes a tough decision to say, "Hey, my network is not broad enough to go get the talent I need for this job." Having said that, with Alessa right now, we've pulled together, you know, sort of a virtual company, but they're all people that I've worked with in the past. So my own network, in fact, had the breadth to get this one started.
Sure. Tell me, what are some of your favorite interview questions as you're hiring people?
So when I'm hiring, particularly technical people and engineers, I always am curious to know what their hobbies are. Do you work on your own car? Are you a radio hobbyist? And to find out, what I'm trying to find out is what they love to do is in alignment with what we need to do. Mm. And sometimes that can be quite telling. I hired a young woman from Stanford, chemical engineer, to come and do some work for us at Endotex. And she was also an equestrian and into horses and stuff. And she drove this old Suburban that she could tow the trailer with. And so I asked her about that. And how's that thing doing? She goes, well, the brakes went out a while ago and I called my dad. And he sent me the manual. And so she did her own brake job. She said, no problem. She put the car up on the rack and did her own brake job. And I said, you're hired.
There you go. Well, how about at the executive level? You've hired a number of executive team members.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit as how you approach that and what are the qualities or characteristics that you're looking for?
Yeah. So I'm looking for persistence. I'm looking for candid, open communication styles. I don't like a hidden agenda. And so we want to ferret out not only what are their hobbies, but what do they consider their most important success? What was a big success? And how did that resonate with the team? And how do you, you know, what accounts for that success? And then also, you know, what's a failure? You know, what did you fail to read at the end of the day that you learned from? So those are a couple of key questions.
Is there any books that you would say are must reads for somebody that's a leader?
I have some books that are not necessarily about leadership, but they are about strong leaders. And two of them, one is called Theodore Rex, and the author is Morris, and it's about Teddy Roosevelt's presidencies, because he assumed the role after McKinley was assassinated, and then he ran for re-election. But it's about what he did in his presidency and how he did it. Was pretty remarkable. I mean, he got the Panama Canal built. He rebuilt the U.S. fleet. He did some things that are truly remarkable. And he was an exquisite leader. Very charismatic. That's a good one. The other one is a Winston Churchill biography called The Last Lion. And that one, it was about his war leadership as prime minister. And it's fascinating reading, what he had to go through and how he partnered with Roosevelt.
Interesting.
So, interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, we definitely have lost some of those stories that need to be revisited, characters that had an impact on kind of us. And for sure.
I guess the leadership stories that emerge from those books are how charismatic, how the vision that they had, and how they were able to recruit support to get their mission accomplished.
So are there any habits or things that you're doing differently in the last 5 years that you wish you would have started earlier?
Gosh, I guess more recreational reading. It's kind of fun. But also some work reading and just kind of exploring interests that have always been perking along there, but, you know, never taking the time to explore. And then traveling a little bit more. We just got back from the Galapagos Islands, and we're actually also in the Amazon river basin in Ecuador. And fascinating. I mean, the Galapagos are a world unto themselves. But what we found in the Amazon was a place, kind of a resort or a lodge called the Napo Preserve, which is near the Napo River. And what's remarkable is the local community, the indigenous people, conceived of and built this lodge.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing. And you have to get anything in, you have to paddle it in a canoe. Okay. So they built these huts and these structures out of oil pipe, you know, drilling pipe that they welded together, and they built these very comfortable lodges and a kitchen, and all of this stuff had to be floated in. But they did it to preserve their heritage and preserve their lifestyle and not have to sell out to the oil companies.
Got it.
Cool.
Very cool. So you're kind of doing a Bear Grylls kind of adventure.
Yeah. It's good.
Well, I love technology and I love to use tools. Anything that you have in your that you use on a regular basis that's helped you be more efficient or effective?
Well, project planning software, I insist that our team have that well in hand, and that we do all of the discipline planning up front to know where we're headed and where we're going to get into trouble. And there's just emerged some stuff now that's on the cloud-based project software that's collaborative. So you can have multiple contributors, you know, in on the same project. We're going to try that here with Alessa Therapeutics. So I'm interested in seeing how that works.
Great. Well, any parting advice that you would give to somebody starting out in their career that you think would be helpful?
Yeah, I think, you know, get that first job and don't hold out for the job that you conceive to be your lifelong dream yet. You'll get there, but start anywhere, but just get started. I think a lot of engineers come out of college dreaming to be, you know, an R&D engineer. But that's not necessarily where you have to start. And that's not necessarily where the jobs are for new hires. Oftentimes they're going to be in a different sort of role, you know, manufacturing engineering or clinical engineering. And I think a really great place for an engineer who's interested in med tech to spend some time is in the clinic. And so if you can find a role that exposes you to physicians and patients, I think that's a wonderful way to bring meaning to the later jobs that you'll do, either in product development or general management, is establishing that connection. Too many times, engineers never get out into the field to see what their products do and how they're used. And that can be very telling. So I'd say take whatever's offered to get started in the field and the company you like, and then make it known where you want to go from here and kind of wiggle your way in that direction. And all of that will come true.
Great. So outside of travel, what do you like to do for fun?
So I like photography. I'm kind of a nut about cameras. So we had that gear with us in the Galapagos. Like to cycle. And we live in an area where the cycling is just exquisite. We have the hills and we have the flats. And so that takes up time every week. Not a very good golfer because I don't spend a lot of time on it.
Got it. Well, thanks, John. I definitely enjoyed talking with you, and as always, wish you continued success in your new venture.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you, and you never know, I might be needing some talent here pretty soon.
Okay, now that'd be great. Well,
thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.